sustain consistent work behavior, or honor financial obligations. 7. Lack of remorse, as indicated by being indifferent to or rationalizing having hurt, mistreated, or stolen from another. And 8. Evidence of conduct disorder, impulsive, aggressive, callous, or deceitful behavior that is persistent and difficult to deter with threats or punishment, with onset before age 15 years. Other systems of diagnosis use different words for the essential sociopathic traits: sadistic, unempathic, cruel, devaluing, immoral, primitive, callous, predatory, bullying, dehumanizing. The term primitive as a descriptor of sociopathic traits deserves special attention. The word derives not from ancient historical times, but from ancient personal times, the early years of life. It helps to explain why there is a multiplicity of defects in these people. In early development, everything is happening at once. Major emotional capacities are developing alongside major cognitive capacities. Children must develop ways to manage emotional distress, anxiety, confusion, disappointment, loss, fear, all while they are growing in their capacity to think and sorting out what is real and what is their imagination. We all develop systems to do this, to tolerate and control our emotions, understand and empathize with the people around us, and tell the difference between reality and wishes or fears. But not people with the early primitive emotional problems seen in sociopathy. They do not tolerate disappointments. Instead, they fly into rages and claim that the upsetting reality isn't real. They make up an alternative reality and insist that it is true. This is the definition of a delusion. When it is told to others, it is basically a lie. As described earlier, successful sociopaths may not look very crazy, but this capacity to lose touch with reality shows up when they are stressed by criticism or disappointment. Later, when they are less stressed, they explain their loss of reality with rationalizations or simply more lies. The primitive nature of people with sociopathic traits can also be seen through the findings of brain research. In early life, along with its psychological developments, the brain is developing physically. It is notable that people with sociopathic traits have been found to have abnormalities in the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala regions of their brains, areas closely associated with essential cognitive and emotional functions. Psychological mechanisms in sociopathy. People with sociopathic traits employ specific abnormal emotional mechanisms. Primary among these is projective identification. Projection by itself refers to a belief that others have feelings or thoughts which are actually in the mind of the individual doing the projecting. Commonly, these are aggressive and dangerous feelings which are managed by being projected to others who are then seen as aggressive and dangerous. When this process occurs regularly, it is simply called paranoia. Projective identification is the most serious version of paranoia. The identification part of the term refers to seeing others not just as having threatening characteristics, but as entirely dangerous people. People who have to be attacked or destroyed. This psychological mechanism contributes to loss of reality, rage outbursts, and attacks on others. When it is combined with a lack of empathy and its corresponding lack of guilt for harming others, the danger from such people is enormous. Projective identification is not the only defective psychological mechanism in sociopaths. Because of the incapacity to realistically appraise or care for people, others are alternately seen as evil or good, according to the projection in use at the moment. The sociopath may treat people as though they are great friends, charmingly complimenting them on how wonderful they are, then abruptly turn on them as the enemy. Loyalty is highly prized by sociopaths, because it serves their personal ends, but there is no real relationship. Dividing the world into good and bad in an unstable, fluctuating way is called splitting. Although sociopathy always means a lack of empathy, there is one way in which severe sociopaths do have a certain frightening type of empathy. It is the empathy of the predator. A tiger stalking his prey must have an ability to sense the prey's fear, or at least to be aware of the small signs of that fear. The tiger is empathic with its prey, but not sympathetic or caring. Successful sociopaths are like that. They are closely attuned to their victim's emotional state. Does the victim buy what the sociopath is selling? Does he need false reassurance, a compliment on his intelligence or appearance, a lying promise, or a friendly gesture to keep him thinking the sociopath is honorable? The successful sociopath's predatory empathy reflects a definite perceptive acumen, making him a genius at manipulation. When it works, it produces a disastrous trust in him. Yet, like the tiger, he is unconcerned about the welfare of his target. The pathological emotional problems in sociopathy make one another worse. An inability to have a consistent, realistic view of the world, or to maintain emotionally genuine relationships leads to more paranoia. The weakness in impulse control, which arises from enraged reactions to imagined flights and produces reckless destructive behavior, leads to a greater need to deny criticism with more lies to tell oneself and everyone else, and an increasing distance from reality. The more a sociopath needs to scapegoat others, the more he genuinely hates them, making him even more aggressive and sadistic. Life is devoted to endless destruction in the service of an endless quest for power and admiration, unmitigated by basic empathy or guilt.
Donald Trump.
Because Mr. Trump has been a very public figure for many years, and because we have been able to hear from many who have known him for a long time, we are in an excellent position to know his behaviors, his speech and actions, which are precisely the basis for making an assessment of his dangerousness, whether we assess him using the official DSM criteria for antisocial personality disorder, APD,
or whether we apply our knowledge of malignant narcissism, both of which include the signs and symptoms of sociopathy.
Let us consider these in turn. Lack of empathy for others, lack of remorse, lying and cheating. Mr. Trump's mocking the disability of a handicapped reporter, unconcerned for the safety of protesters at a rally, get rid of them.
Sexually assaulting women, threatening physical harm to his opponent in the election, alluding to gun owners eliminating, repeatedly verbally attacking a family who lost their son, fighting for the country,
personally degrading people who criticize him, calling them insulting names as he did in both the Republican primaries and the general election, a history of cheating people he has hired by not paying them what he owes, creating the now forced to disband Trump University, targeting and terrifying minority groups, all provide overwhelming evidence of profound sociopathic traits, which are far more important than trying to assign any specific diagnostic label.
Loss of reality.
Mr. Trump's insistence on the truth of matters proven to be untrue, alternative facts, is well known. His insistence has occurred both repeatedly and over a long time, even when such denial is not in his interest, and it would be better for him to acknowledge that he spoke in error. He has falsely claimed that President Obama is not an American, and that he wiretapped Mr. Trump's building. That his own loss in the vote total of the general election was caused by illegal aliens. That he had the largest inauguration crowd in history, etc.
Together, these show a persistent loss of reality.
Rage, reaction, and impulsivity. Mr. Trump's rages have been reported on multiple occasions in the press, leading to sudden decisions and actions. He fired and subsequently threatened the director of the FBI after hearing him testify in unwanted ways before Congress. Launched more than 50 missiles within 72 hours of seeing a disturbing image on the news, reversing his stated Middle East policy, precipitously violated diplomatic norms, creating international tensions, as with reports of threatening to invade Mexico, hanging up on the Prime Minister of Australia, antagonizing Germany, France, Greece, and others, issued illegal executive orders, apparently without vetting them with knowledgeable attorneys, and so on. Conclusion.
Conclusion.
Donald Trump's speech and behavior show that he has severe sociopathic traits. The significance of this cannot be overstated.
While there have surely been American presidents who could be said to be narcissistic,
none have shown sociopathic qualities to the degree seen in Mr. Trump. Correspondingly, none have been so definitively and so obviously dangerous. Democracy requires respect and protection from multiple points of view, concepts that are incompatible with sociopathy.
The need to be seen as superior,
when coupled with lack of empathy or remorse for harming other people, are in fact the signature characteristics of tyrants who seek the control and destruction of all who oppose them, as well as loyalty to themselves instead of to the country they lead. The paranoia of severe sociopathy creates a profound risk of war, since heads of other nations will inevitably disagree with or challenge the sociopathic leader. Who will experience the disagreement as a personal attack, leading to rage reactions and impulsive action to destroy this enemy. A common historical example is the creation by sociopathic leaders of an international incident to have an excuse to seize more power, suspend constitutional rights, impose martial law, and discriminate against minority groups. Because such leaders will lie to others in government and to their citizens, those who would check the sociopath's power find it difficult to contradict his claims and actions with facts. Would-be tyrants also typically devalue a free press, undermining journalists' ability to inform and resist the move toward war and away from democracy. Mr. Trump's sociopathic characteristics are undeniable. They create a profound danger for America's democracy and safety. Over time, these characteristics will only become worse, either because Mr. Trump will succeed in gaining more power and more grandiosity with less grasp on reality, or because he will engender more criticism, producing more paranoia, more lies, and more enraged destruction.
Lance Doty,
sociopathy.
MD, is a training and supervising analyst emeritus at the Boston Psychoanalytic
Society
like
a fox,
and Institute.
Or just crazy?
And retired
this question has surrounded Donald Trump since his campaign for president. The question is whether a person who is repetitively immoral, who cons others, lies, cheats, and manipulates to get what he wants, doesn't care whom he hurts, just as long as he is gratifying himself, whether such a person's indifference to the feelings of others for personal gain is just being clever, crazy like a fox, or are these actions a sign of something much more serious? Could they be expressions of significant mental derangement? The answer to that question is emphatically yes. To understand why, it's necessary to understand Donald Trump is A. bad, B. mad, C. all of the above. John D. Gartner, Ph.D. Donald Trump is so visibly psychologically impaired that it is obvious even to a layman that something is wrong with him. Still, putting a name to that disturbance has been a challenge for two reasons. First, because of the Goldwater gag order, discussed extensively in Part 2 of this book, which has forced mental health professionals to censor themselves, despite how alarmed they might be, and second, Trump's is a genuinely complex case. Like the story of the blind man and the elephant, many writers have tried to analyze and diagnose Trump and have gotten pieces of the elephant right. What is missing is the whole elephant. There are a lot of things wrong with him, and together they are a scary witch's brew. One of the most recurrent debates and a genuine mystery is to what extent is Trump just a really bad person, and to what extent is he really crazy? Psychoanalyst Stephen Reisner has written in Slate, "This is not madness. Impulsivity, threats, aggression, ridicule, denial of reality, and the mobilization of the mob that he used to get there, to the presidency, are not symptoms. It is time to call it out for what it is. Evil." Reisner, 2017. According to this view, Donald Trump is crazy like a fox. That is, his abnormal persona is an act, a diabolical plan to manipulate the public's worst instincts for fun, power, and profit. When Trump tweeted about his imaginary inauguration crowd size and about Obama having tapped his phones, Was there any part of him that believed this denial of reality? If so, then Michael Tansey, why crazy like a fox versus crazy like a crazy really matters, who writes here about Trump having delusional disorder, may be right that Trump is not crazy like a fox, but crazy like a crazy. My old boss, Paul McHugh, longtime chairman of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, used to say that a dog can have both ticks and fleas. I will argue that Trump can be both evil and crazy, and that unless we see how these two components work together, we will never truly understand him, nor will we recognize how much danger we are in. Bad, malignant narcissism. The quintessence of evil was how Eric Fromm, 1964, described malignant narcissism, a term he introduced in the 1960s. Fromm, a refugee from Nazi Germany, developed the diagnosis to explain Hitler. While Fromm is most well known as one of the founders of humanistic psychology, whose basic premise, ironically, is that man's basic nature is good, the Holocaust survivor had a lifelong obsession with the psychology of evil. Malignant narcissism was, according to Fromm, the most severe pathology, the root of the most vicious destructiveness and inhumanity. The modern figure most associated with the study of malignant narcissism is my former teacher, Otto Kernberg, 1970, who defined the syndrome as having four components. 1. Narcissistic personality disorder. 2. Antisocial behavior. 3. Paranoid traits. And 4. Sadism. Kernberg told the New York Times that malignantly narcissistic leaders such as Hitler and Stalin are able to take control because their inordinate narcissism is expressed in grandiosity, a confidence in themselves, and the assurance that they know what the world needs. Good, 2003. At the same time, they express their aggression in cruel and sadistic behavior against their enemies, whoever does not submit to them or love them. As Pollock, 1978, wrote, "The malignant narcissist is pathologically grandiose, lacking in conscience and behavioral regulation, with characteristic demonstrations of joyful cruelty and sadism." Much has been written in the press about Trump having narcissistic personality disorder. Yet, as critics have pointed out, merely being narcissistic is hardly disqualifying. However, normal narcissism and malignant narcissism have about as much in common as a benign and malignant tumor. The latter is far rarer, more pathological and dangerous, and more often than not, terminal. It's the difference between life and death. Narcissism. Narcissistic personality disorder is described in this book by Craig Malkin, Pathological Narcissism and Politics, A Lethal Mix. Trump finds himself to be uniquely superior. Only I can fix it. And appears to believe that he knows more than everyone about everything, despite his lack of experience, study, intellectual curiosity, or normal attention span. Since he took office, an amusing video montage has made its way through social media in which, in the course of 3 minutes, Trump brags about being the world's greatest expert in 20 different subject areas. "No one knows more about, fill in the blank, than me," he repeats over and over. Antisocial personality disorder. In his piece in this book, Lance Dodes describes antisocial personality disorder, or sociopathy. Antisocials lie, exploit, and violate the rights of others, and they have neither remorse nor empathy for those they harm. While we will not give a final diagnosis here, the fact-checking website PolitiFact estimated that 76% of Trump's statements were false or mostly false. Holin and Kui, 2015, and Politico estimated that Trump told a lie every 3 minutes and 15 seconds. Cheney et al., 2016. We have ample evidence of Trump's pervasive pattern of exploiting and violating the rights of others. According to New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, Trump University was a straight-up fraud, a fraud from beginning to end. Gass, 2016. Also, dozens of lawsuits attest to Trump's pattern and practice of not paying his contractors. Finally, there is Trump's pattern of serial sexual assault, which he bragged about on tape, even before a dozen women came forward, whom he then called liars. Trump is allergic to apology and appears to feel no remorse of any kind. It is as if being Trump means never having to say you're sorry. When political consultant Frank Luntz asked Trump if he had ever asked God for forgiveness, Trump said, "I'm not sure I have. I don't think so." Scott, 2015. His unrepentance notwithstanding, he also boasted that he had a great relationship with God. And empathy? Even Trump's former mentor, the notorious Roy Cohn, lawyer for gangsters and Joseph McCarthy, said that when it came to his feelings for his fellow human beings, Trump pisses ice water. Lang, 2016. Paranoia. Paranoia is not a diagnosis, but rather a trait that we see in some conditions. When Donald Trump was asked to document his false claim that thousands and thousands of New Jersey Muslims openly celebrated the attacks of 9/11, he cited a link to InfoWars, the website of radio talk show host Alex Jones. Jones, nicknamed the King of Conspiracies, believes that the American government was behind the September 11 attacks, that FEMA is setting up concentration camps, and that the Sandy Hook school shooting was a hoax. Yet, according to Trump, Jones is one of the few media personalities he trusts. "Your reputation is amazing," Trump told Jones when he appeared as a guest on Jones's show on December 2, 2015. Trump vowed that if he were elected president, "You will find out who really knocked down the World Trade Center." In the same week, both the New York Times, Haberman, 2016, and the Washington Post, Washington Post Editorial Board, 2016, ran front-page stories on Trump as a conspiracy theorist. Before the election, Right Wing Watch, Tashman, 2016, accumulated a list of 58 conspiracies that Trump had proclaimed or implied were true. Of course, that list has grown since then. Many are truly bizarre. For example, not only is Obama a Muslim born in Kenya, but, according to Trump, he had a Hawaiian government bureaucrat murdered to cover up the truth about his birth certificate. "How amazing! The state health director who verified copies of Obama's birth certificate died in a plane crash today. All others lived," Trump said. Antonin Scalia was murdered. "They say they found a pillow on his face, which is a pretty unusual place to find a pillow." Later, fake news websites sponsored by the Russians laid this murder at Hillary's feet, and Ted Cruz's father aided the Kennedy assassination, the mother of all conspiracy theories. "What was he doing with Lee Harvey Oswald shortly before the death, before the shooting? It's horrible." And still the world was shocked when Trump accused Barack Obama of illegally wiretapping Trump Tower. Why were we surprised? When you combine these three ingredients, narcissism, antisocial traits, and paranoia, you get a leader who feels omnipotent, omniscient, and entitled to total power, and who rages at being persecuted by imaginary enemies, including vulnerable minority groups who actually represent no threat whatsoever. With such a leader, all who are not part of the in-group or who fail to kiss the leader's ring are enemies who must be destroyed. Sadism. Because he is a sadist, the malignant narcissist will take a bully's glee in persecuting, terrorizing, and even exterminating his enemies and scapegoats. When a protester was escorted out of a Trump rally, Trump famously said, "I'd like to punch him in the face," in a tone that suggested it would genuinely bring him great pleasure. Narcissists often hurt others in the pursuit of their selfish interests. A notable difference between normal narcissistic personality disorder and malignant narcissism is the feature of sadism, or the gratuitous enjoyment of the pain of others. A narcissist will deliberately damage other people in pursuit of their own selfish desires, but may regret and will, in some circumstances, show remorse for doing so, while a malignant narcissist will harm others and enjoy doing so, showing little empathy or regret for the damage they have caused. We often see Trump punch down, demeaning and humiliating people weaker than he. In fact, a substantial portion of the 34,000 tweets he has sent since he joined Twitter can be described as cyberbullying. Sometimes he will send the same nasty tweet 6 times across a day's news cycle in order to maximally humiliate his victim. Eric Fromm saw evil up close, thought about it throughout his life, and applied his genius to boil it down to its psychological essence. A malignant narcissist is a human monster. He may not be as bad as Hitler, but according to Fromm, he is cut from the same cloth. The Egyptian pharaohs, the Roman Caesars, the Borgias, Hitler, Stalin, Trujillo, they all show certain similar features, Fromm writes. Malignant narcissism is a psychiatric disorder that makes you evil. What's scary is that's not even the worst of it. Mad. Before the 2016 election, I wrote an article for the Huffington Post, Gartner 2016, warning about Trump. At that point, in June 2016, there was still a strong hope that Trump would pivot and become more presidential, a hope based on the assumption that while he might be a wicked opportunist and a con man, he was still a rational actor and thus would change tack when it was in his own best interest. I wrote, "The idea that Trump is going to settle down and become presidential when he achieves power is wishful thinking. Success emboldens malignant narcissists to become even more grandiose, reckless, and aggressive." Sure enough, after winning the nomination, there has been no pivot towards more reasonable behavior and ideas, just the opposite. He has become more shrill, combative, and openly racist. After riding his angry base to the White House, to alter his behavior to a saner presentation after the election would have been in Trump's best interest. As Rob Reiner put it on Real Time with Bill Maher, "People don't understand why Trump doesn't just stop acting mentally ill. Why can't he just stop being mentally ill? Why? Because his illness is not a ruse. It can't just be turned off when it's convenient." According to Fromm, malignant narcissism is a madness that tends to grow in the life of the afflicted person. In The Heart of Man, Fromm argues that malignant narcissism lies on the borderline between sanity and insanity. In more benign forms of narcissism, being related to reality curbs the narcissism and keeps it within bounds, but the malignant narcissist recognizes no such boundaries. His grandiose fantasy trumps reality. The thing that distinguishes the malignant narcissistic leader from a run-of-the-mill psychotic patient is his power to coerce and seduce others to share his grandiose and persecutory delusions. This Caesarian madness would be nothing but plain insanity, Fromm writes, were it not for one factor. By his power, Caesar has bent reality to his narcissistic fantasies. He has forced everyone to agree he is God, the most powerful and wisest of men. Hence, his megalomania seems to be a reasonable feeling. According to Fromm's description of the disorder, Trump lives on the border of psychosis. Does he ever go over the border? Is it all for effect, to rile up his base, deflect blame, and distract from his shortcomings? Or does Trump actually believe the crazy things he says? If you take Donald Trump's words literally, you would have to conclude that he is psychotic. A delusion is technically defined as a rigidly held, demonstrably false belief which is impervious to any contradictory facts. Is he crazy like a fox? Asks Michael Tanzi, 2017b, or simply crazy like a crazy. With Trump, it's often genuinely difficult to know, but as Tanzi makes frighteningly clear, this is not a trivial academic distinction. Literally, the fate of the entire world may depend on the answer. Surpassing the devastation of climate, healthcare, education, diplomacy, social services, freedom of speech, liberty, and justice for all, nothing is more incomprehensible than the now plausible prospect of all-out nuclear war. Because of this existential threat, it is absolutely urgent that we understand the differences between a president who is merely crazy like a fox, shrewd, calculating, the truth is only spoken when it happens to coincide with one's purposes, versus what I have termed crazy like a crazy, well-hidden core grandiose and paranoid delusions that are disconnected from reality. Tanzi, 2017b. Insight into this question comes from, of all sources, Joe Scarborough, host of the popular MSNBC show Morning Joe. After Trump claimed that Trump Tower had been bugged by Barack Obama, Scarborough tweeted, "His tweets this weekend suggest the president is not crazy like a fox, just crazy." Some of Trump's false claims can be seen as giving him a perverse strategic advantage. For example, his claim that Obama was not born in the United States appealed to the racist portion of the electorate, who were already inclined to see a black president as foreign and illegitimate. Other false statements of his seem more blatantly crazy, precisely because they offer him no discernible strategic advantage. Take his false claim that he had the biggest inaugural crowd in history. On the first day of his presidency, he lost credibility with the entire world with that demonstrably false claim. As Groucho Marx said, "Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?" When there was no longer any need to motivate his base, which was already ecstatically celebrating his inauguration. He needed to broaden his base and shore up his authority as president, but did the opposite. On Morning Joe on April 3, Joe Scarborough and Donnie Deutsch, both of whom had known Trump personally for over a decade, came to two conclusions. First, that Trump must suffer from a mental illness. Because his behavior since ascending to the presidency had been so irrationally self-destructive, and second, that Trump had gotten dramatically worse since he was inaugurated. Scarborough: "People, stop tweeting at me. How could you not have known? We've known this guy for 10, 11, 12 years. We had misgivings, but it's safe to say neither you, Donnie Deutsch, nor I thought it would be this bad. We were concerned, really, really concerned, but never thought this guy would be this much of a petulant brat. We didn't think he would wake up every day and hit his hand with a hammer." Deutsch: "I also think it's time. I know the psychiatric community has the Goldwater rule about not diagnosing from a distance. I just think he's not a well guy, period." Scarborough: "During the campaign, he would do things that were offensive to us. That energized his base, but that's not like hitting your hand with a hammer. What he's doing now is not in his self-interest. Then you start saying how well he is," pointing to his own head, "when he's doing things that any sane, rational person would know would hurt him politically." For these same reasons, Michael Tansey suggests that Trump may meet DSM-5 criteria for delusional disorder, which require evidence of a delusion lasting longer than a month in the absence of a more serious psychotic disorder such as schizophrenia or bipolar disorder type 1, which would in themselves explain the presence of delusional thinking. Trump doesn't show signs of being schizophrenic, but we should explore where he fits on the bipolar spectrum. He definitely has the hypomanic temperament I wrote about in my two books, The Hypomanic Edge, The Link Between a Little Craziness and a Lot of Success in America, 2005, and In Search of Bill Clinton, A Psychological Biography, 2008. Hypomanic temperament is genetically based, running in the families of people with bipolar relatives, but it represents a milder and more functional expression of the same traits as mania. Historically, hypomanic temperament has received little attention compared to bipolar disorder, but the founders of modern psychiatry, Eugen Bleuler, Emil Kraepelin, and Ernst Kretschmer, first described these personalities early in the 20th century. Bleuler, 1924, Kraepelin, 1908, 1921, Kretschmer, 1925. In an article in The New Republic, Gartner, 2005, I summarized the traits of hypomanic temperament as follows. Hypomanics are whirlwinds of activity who are filled with energy and need little sleep, less than 6 hours. They are restless, impatient, and easily bored, needing constant stimulation and tend to dominate conversations. They are driven, ambitious, and veritable forces of nature in pursuit of their goals. While these goals may appear grandiose to others, they are supremely confident of success, and no one can tell them otherwise. They can be exuberant, charming, witty, gregarious, but also arrogant. They are impulsive in ways that show poor judgment, saying things off the top of their head, and acting on ideas and desires quickly, seemingly oblivious to potentially damaging consequences. They are risk-takers who seem oblivious to how risky their behavior truly is. They have large libidos and often act out sexually. Indeed, all of their appetites are heightened. This description sounds an awful lot like Trump, who reports, "I usually sleep only 4 hours a night." 1987, which by itself is usually a pretty reliable indicator of hypomania. Indeed, he boasts about it. "How can you compete against people like me if I sleep only 4 hours?" He claims to work 7 days a week, and in a typical 18-hour day, to make over 100 phone calls and have at least a dozen meetings. He also tweeted, "Without energy, you have nothing," hence his taunt of Jeb Bush as a low-energy person. By contrast, a charge that proved quite effective. Like most hypomanics, Trump is easily distracted. We could add attention deficit disorder to the Trump differential, except attention deficit disorder almost always goes with the territory for hypomanics. Most successful people have very short attention spans. It has a lot to do with imagination, Trump wrote with Meredith McIver in Think Like a Billionaire in 2004. He is correct. The same rapidity of thought that helps engender creativity makes it difficult for one to stay on one linear track of ideas without skipping to the next. Like most hypomanics, Trump trusts his own ideas and judgment over those of anyone and everyone else, and follows his vision no matter how crazy or idiotic other people think it is. One of my dictums when working with hypomanic patients is that nothing fails like success. If they succeed in achieving one of their wildly ambitious goals, there is often a noticeable uptick in their hypomania, sometimes even precipitating a full-blown hypomanic episode, which, unlike hypomanic temperament, is a diagnosable disorder. They become more aggressive, irritable, reckless, and impulsive. Now seemingly confirmed in their grandiosity, they drink their own Kool-Aid and feel even more invincible and brilliant. They pursue even bolder, riskier, and more ambitious goals without listening to dissent, doing their due diligence, or considering contradictory facts. Their gut is always right. Once, Trump was asked whom he went to for advice. With a straight face, he said, "Myself." Trump is Trump's most trusted advisor. In the same vein, with the increase in grandiosity, comes a corresponding increase in paranoia over the fools and rivals who might naysay the hypomanic's insights, impede his progress, or destroy him out of jealousy or ignorance. In fact, this is a pattern for Trump. In 1988, after the publication of his best-selling book, The Art of the Deal, Trump's celebrity really took off. His response was an increase in his hypomania, according to political writer Michael Cruz, 2016, in his article, 1988, The Year Trump Lost His Mind. His response to his surging celebrity was a series of manic, ill-advised ventures. He cheated on his wife, the mother of his first three children. In business, he was acquisitive to the point of recklessness. He bought and sold chunks of stocks of companies he talked about taking over. He glitzed up his gaudy yacht, the yacht the banks would seize less than 3 years later. He used hundreds of millions of dollars of borrowed money to pay high prices for a hotel and an airline, and his lenders would take them too. And he tussled for months with game show magnate Merv Griffin for ownership of his third casino in Atlantic City, the most expensive gargantuan one yet, the Trump Taj Mahal, which led quickly to the first of his four corporate bankruptcy filings. During that period, Trump, the storied dealmaker, went on a buying binge and made impulsive, ill-advised investments, often paying the asking price without negotiating at all. As Cruz wrote in his Politico piece, that spring, though, he purchased the Plaza Hotel because he openly coveted the Manhattan landmark, so much so that he paid more for it than anybody anywhere ever had spent on a hotel, $407.5 million, for a hotel that wasn't turning enough profit to service the debt to which Trump was committed. And in the fall, he agreed to buy the Eastern Airlines shuttle, which he wanted to rename the Trump shuttle, for a sum that analysts and even his own partners considered excessive, more than the airline itself thought the shuttle was worth. It was not a lengthy financial analysis, said Nobles, president of Trump Shuttle, describing it as back of the envelope and very quick. Donald said, "I really want to buy it." Trump could be the poster child for the dictum that when it comes to hypomanics, nothing fails like success. Cruz continued, if Trump's current campaign is the culmination of a lifelong effort to turn his name into a brand, his brand into money, and all of it into power, 1988 was the first sustained look at what the man who is the shocking favorite to be the Republican Party's nominee does when he gets a hold of it. It was the year when Trump's insatiable appetites and boundless ego, this early spectacular show of success, nearly did him in. Fast forward 28 years to 2016, when Trump once again achieved success beyond anyone's wildest imaginings. He became addicted to rallies, where he excited crowds with his hypomanic charisma, and where they in turn threw gasoline on the fire of his hypomanic grandiosity. This culminated in the Republican National Convention, at which Trump made a grandiose statement that encapsulates it all: "Only I can fix it." David Brooks, 2016, is not a mental health professional, but he astutely commented on what appeared to him to be Trump's increasing hypomania. "He cannot be contained because he is psychologically off the chain. With each passing week, he displays the classic symptoms of medium-grade mania in more disturbing forms: inflated self-esteem, sleeplessness, impulsivity, aggression, and a compulsion to offer advice on subjects he knows nothing about. His speech patterns are like something straight out of a psychiatric textbook. Manics display something called flight of ideas. It's a formal thought disorder in which ideas tumble forth through a disordered chain of associations. One word sparks another, which sparks another, and they're off to the races." As one trained psychiatrist said to me, "Compare Donald Trump's speaking patterns to a Robin Williams monologue, but with insults instead of jokes." Trump's first hypomanic crash resulted only in a few bankruptcies, but while he is president, the consequences could be on a scale so vast it's difficult even to contemplate. Let's put these two moving parts together, bad and mad. Trump is a profoundly evil man, exhibiting malignant narcissism. His worsening hypomania is making him increasingly more irrational, grandiose, paranoid, aggressive, irritable, and impulsive. Trump is bad, mad, and getting worse. He evinces the most destructive and dangerous collection of psychiatric symptoms possible for a leader. The worst-case scenario is now our reality. Often as therapists, we are called on to help our patients see that their life circumstances are not as catastrophic as they might feel. In the case of Trump, however, our job is the opposite: to warn the public that the election of Donald Trump is a true emergency and that the consequences most likely will be catastrophic. It's a catastrophe that might have been avoided if we in the mental health community had told the public the truth instead of allowing ourselves to be gagged by the Goldwater rule. "See something, say nothing" appears to be the APA's motto when it comes to national security. History will not be kind to a profession that aided the rise of an American Hitler through its silence.
John D. Gardner, Ph.D., is a clinical psychologist. He taught in the Department of Psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University Medical School for 28 years. He is the author of In Search of Bill Clinton, A Psychological Biography, and The Hypomanic Edge, The Link Between a Little Craziness and a Lot of Success in America. He practices in Baltimore and New York.
Why crazy like a fox versus crazy like a crazy really matters. Delusional disorder, admiration of brutal dictators, the Nuclear Codes, and Trump, by Michael J. Tanzi, Ph.D. Since becoming president, Donald Trump has made increasingly staggering statements contradicted by irrefutable evidence to the contrary in videos, photos, and tweets, such that we have no choice but to consider whether his psychological disturbance is far more severe than what has widely been proposed as merely narcissistic personality disorder, merely antisocial personality disorder, or merely pathological lying. Delusional disorder. I begin with a presentation of the exceedingly rare diagnosis of delusional disorder, which may help us understand why Trump makes such jaw-dropping statements. I am intending not to diagnose, but to educate the general public so that each person can make his or her own informed assessment. The criteria from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 5th edition, are easily observable, simple behavioral characteristics that even a fifth grader could understand. I will then examine the final 5 minutes of a meandering, free-flowing, 15-minute videotaped speech Trump delivered to the CIA the morning after his inauguration to see if the diagnosis can provide a lens through which to make sense of three egregious, separate, and startling statements contained in a mere 5 minutes. Delusional disorder is coded as 297.1 for the purpose of insurance coverage for treatment. Those with delusional disorder scoff at the notion that there is a problem in the first place, such that insurance coverage for treatment is irrelevant. This stealth disorder is exceptionally beguiling because such individuals can seem perfectly normal, logical, high-functioning, and even charming, so long as the delusion itself is not challenged. Delusional disorder is described as, quote, one of the less common psychotic disorders in which patients have delusions that differ from classical symptoms of schizophrenia. Psychosis is defined as, quote, a condition in which there is profound loss of contact with external reality. The schizophrenic person tends to display bizarre behavior, hallucinations, and overtly disordered thinking. Whereas in schizophrenia, the disconnection tends to be highly visible and all-encompassing, the less serious delusional disorder is neither bizarre nor readily apparent to the outside observer. Here are the criteria. Delusions are beliefs that exist despite indisputable factual evidence to the contrary. Delusions are held with absolute certainty despite their falsity and impossibility. Delusions can have a variety of themes, including grandeur and persecution. Delusions are not of the bizarre variety, quote, I am being poisoned by the CIA, but rather seem like ordinary figures of speech, except that each word is meant literally. For example, I alone am the chosen one, invincible, extraordinary beyond words, the very best of the best in every way. Delusional people tend to be extremely thin-skinned and humorless, especially regarding their delusions. Delusions are central to the person's existence, and questioning them elicits a jolting and visceral reaction. Delusional disorder is chronic, even lifelong, and tends to worsen in adulthood, middle age, and beyond. Words and actions are consistent and logical if the basic premise of the delusion is accepted as reality. Quote, because I am superior to all, it follows that I would never apologize, because I am never wrong. General logical reasoning and behavior are unaffected unless they are very specifically related to the delusion. Person has a heightened sense of self-reference, quote, it's always all about me, and trivial events assume outsized importance when they contradict, quote, you are a con man, not a great businessman, or conversely, support the delusional belief, quote, these adoring crowds recognize that I am extraordinary beyond measure, making trivial events, whether positive or negative, hard to let go of and move past, quote, have I mentioned my greatest ever electoral landslide? Delusional disorder may help us make sense of the last 5 minutes of Trump's CIA address, which contain three staggering statements that lead us to think, he can't possibly mean that. In the 10th minute, Trump declared that he was 1,000% behind the CIA and accused the fake media, quote, some of the most dishonest people on the planet, of making it sound like I had a feud with the intelligence community when the truth is the exact opposite. Anyone in the audience with a cell phone who doubted his own memory could instantly have Googled Trump's innumerable tweets about the incompetence and dishonesty of the, quote, so-called intelligence community, a position he has since reverted to. Did Trump actually believe that the truth was defined by his words and not hard facts to the contrary? Why would he merely lie, despite knowing that each and every person in attendance knew there was not an iota of truth to the claim? His stunning falsehood lacks the shrewdness of the typical pathological liar. If he had been hooked up to a reliable lie detector test and were in fact delusional, he would have passed with flying colors because he literally believes every word he says, despite irrefutable facts to the contrary. He takes it as a given that the world around him will conform to his own warped view of events, and that those who do not believe so are irrational enemies backed by the fake media. A minute later in the speech, he described his disappointment that, as he began his inaugural address, it was raining. But then he claimed, with a finger to the sky, quote, "God looked down and said, 'We're not going to let it rain on your speech.'" He then insisted that the rain stopped immediately and it became, quote, "really sunny," before it, quote, "poured right after I left." Again, anyone at the CIA that day with a cell phone could immediately have watched the video demonstrating clearly that the drizzle on Inauguration Day started as DT began to speak, and that it never got sunny. It never subsequently poured. Again, did he believe every word he was saying? If the answer is yes, this would be compelling evidence of underlying delusional disorder leaking through the veneer of normality. The third statement, of course, was his insistence that the inaugural grounds were packed, quote, "all the way to the Washington Monument." Despite his badgering the National Park Service to come up with photo angles that might suggest a larger crowd, the aerial shots clearly showed that Trump's audience was many hundreds of thousands fewer than Obama's in 2009. Again, Trump claimed this was another example of fake news because the photos did not accord with his certainty of his personal reality. Again, his otherwise inexplicable insistence can be explained only by an understanding of grandiose delusional detachment from reality. These three incidents of demonstrably, factually false statements made in the space of 5 minutes exemplify scores of other completely false statements. He has claimed to know more than all the generals. He has said he has the best temperament of anyone ever to be president. He still bellows that the black and brown teenagers wrongly convicted of raping and brutally beating a woman jogger in the 1989 Central Park 5 case are guilty, despite the fact that the actual rapist confessed 9 years after the crime and knew intimate details of the scene, and despite the rapist's DNA matching a sample from the crime scene. Trump insists he saw on TV thousands of Muslims in New Jersey celebrating the collapse of the World Trade Center towers on September 11, 2001. He insists that he was the very best high school baseball pro prospect in New York City. He has bragged that, quote, "in a movement like the world has never seen, he won the presidency by the greatest electoral landslide since Reagan, when in fact he trailed 5 of the previous 7 electoral totals." And so on and so on. The fact that he lost the popular vote by 3 million because it does not comport with his grandiose delusions, he explains away by declaring that these votes were made by fraudulent voters, despite study after bipartisan study demonstrating that at most a few thousand illegal votes were cast nationwide. Though the term solipsism comes from philosophy, not psychology, it appears relevant to this discussion. Quote, "solipsism is the belief that the person holding the belief is the only real thing in the universe. All other persons and things are merely ornaments or impediments to his happiness." Trump lies regularly and reflexively, telling the truth only when it randomly suits his purposes. Yet, pathological lying does not nearly seem to account for the staggering, self-aggrandizing statements I have referred to. Does he actually believe what he is saying, based upon underlying delusions of grandeur? Had he been hooked up to a lie detector test during a CIA speech, would he have passed without so much as a blip, as I believe? You now have the diagnostic criteria. You make the call. Why does Trump admire brutal dictators? Thomas Jefferson insisted that an informed citizenry is the best protection for democracy. It is therefore extremely disconcerting that a staggering percentage of Americans cannot name our president during the Civil War or the country from which we won our independence. Even more worrisome is that Trump himself did not understand that there are three branches of the federal government and that judges cannot simply, quote, sign bills into law. During a late campaign interview, he was unaware that Russia had not only invaded but had been occupying Crimea for 2 years. In his first global tour, he commented that he was happy to be in Israel after coming from the Middle East. In keeping with Jefferson's warning, if in fact DT harbors an underlying delusional disorder, from a clinical perspective, his delusions would likely be grandiose and paranoid in nature. This would help us to answer, once and for all, the questions of why, during the 2016 presidential campaign and beyond, Trump has repeatedly and openly expressed admiration for Kim Jong-un of North Korea, Bashar al-Assad of Syria, Iraq, Saddam Hussein, and especially Vladimir Putin. There is considerable evidence to suggest that absolute tyranny is Trump's wet dream. The unopposed dictator is the embodiment of the ability to demand adulation on the one hand and to eradicate all perceived enemies with a single nod of the head on the other. With statues and 30-foot portraits everywhere attesting to his godlike status, there would be no problem whatsoever with critical fake media, marching protesters, pesky appellate courts, or the slightest political opposition. Such is the awesome power of the despots whom Trump so inexplicably reveres. Here are statements Trump made about each during his campaign, followed by brief illustrations that barely scratch the surface of their hideous brutality. Kim Jong-un, quote, "You gotta give him credit. When his father died, he goes in, he takes over these tough generals, and he's the boss. It's incredible. He wiped out the uncle, wipes out this one, that one. It's incredible." Kim's uncle was ripped out of a large government meeting as an example and summarily executed by a machine gun-toting firing squad, along with seven of his aides. Kim's aunt, his father's sister, was poisoned. All the remaining children and grandchildren were killed. He executed one general with a firing squad of anti-aircraft missiles at close range, and another bound to a post with a mortar round while requiring multitudes to watch, including their families. His entire country is quite literally starving to death while he finances his nuclear ambitions. Bashar al-Assad, quote, "I think in terms of leadership, he's getting an A, and our president is not doing so well." In his struggle to stay in power, Assad has ruthlessly suppressed his countrymen, resulting in hundreds of thousands of deaths of civilian men, women, and children, many by gassing. If deposed, he will be charged with crimes against humanity. Saddam Hussein, quote, "Okay, so he was a very bad guy. But you know what he did so well? He killed terrorists. He did that so good. He didn't read them the rights. They didn't talk. You were a terrorist. It's over." Hussein is universally regarded as perhaps the most monstrous tyrant of the last several decades. Among his countless atrocities in what has been described as, quote, "the worst chemical weapons attack in human history," he gassed more than 100,000 of his Kurdish citizens then hunted down tens of thousands of survivors, whom he buried alive, for a total of 180,000 murdered in this slaughter alone. Vladimir Putin, quote, "If he says great things about me, I'm going to say great things about him. He's really very much of a leader, very strong control over his country. And look, he has an 82% approval rating." Stunning comments. Trump states clearly that his radiant view of Putin required only that he be flattered by him. In 15 years of Putin's tyranny, journalists who dissent are shot in the back of the head. Dissidents who flee the country are regularly stalked and murdered with poison the favored method, KGB style. Others in asylum are in constant fear for their lives, including the former world chess champion and current chairman of the Human Rights Foundation, Garry Kasparov, and the Russian Olympic runner who blew the whistle on Russia's pervasive doping program, Yulia Stepanova. Either Trump is incomprehensibly naive regarding Putin's popularity at home, the 82% rating was fabricated, or he was swooning from the compliment when Putin called him bright. Not a genius, as Trump has bragged.